You will very, very rarely ever find a patient whose serum magnesium is not fine because what they're testing for is only 1% of magnesium. 1% of magnesium is in our blood. That's it. The rest is in our bones and our tissues. So we don't really have an accurate way of measuring magnesium. Red blood cell magnesium is probably another more accurate test, but still not perfect.
Hello and welcome to the Confidential Podcast, where we discuss and demystify life and everything that impacts it. I'm Simone Gisondi, author, health strategist, life transformation consultant, and overall life enthusiast. I dive deep into the fascinating world of life with each show. Each episode features in-depth conversations with experts, thought leaders, as well as personal stories and experiences that will bring the world around us to life. Whether you're a curious newcomer or a passionate enthusiast, come with me on a journey of discovery and enlightenment. Tune in every week and join me as I demystify all things that touch life. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I have a special guest today who's going to talk about one of the most important nutrients that everybody is deficient in, and it's caused so much illness out there. And she's going to speak about those as well. And we're going to ask her why it's important to make sure that we get this particular nutrient in our body. And that is Dr. Barb Olger. Please welcome Dr. Barb Olger. I wanted to let you guys know she's a licensed naturopathic doctor before you listen to the show so that you know that she comes with a lot of expertise and knowledge. She offers virtual consultations and she is right here in my home province of Ontario. She also conducts in-person appointments in Vaughan, Ontario, aka Woodbridge. She's passionate about empowering individuals to take control of their own health, which is important. Our health is our responsibility. We do not want to put it in the hands of others. And her primary focus is to explore the underlying root causes and provide individualized patient-centered care, which is important. We don't have a catch-all approach to everybody, and especially different ages, different stages of life. And the important thing is that she utilizes evidence-based therapies and provides her patients with the knowledge and tools that are needed for success in health. And her clinical focus is women's health. I love that for all the women out there, especially as we go through the seasons and stages of life. Stress management, which is super important. And of course, inflammatory conditions, which precede really important illnesses. She spends a great deal of time educating individuals, which is important. We all want to know how to take ownership of our health, especially on the importance of magnesium and why we all need to add this important mineral to our health toolbox. And in case you're wondering, that is the nutrient I was referring to during my previous introduction. And when she does not see patients, she actually loves spending time in nature, reading and experimenting with new recipes in the kitchen. And you can find her on Instagram. We'll ask her at the end so that she can reiterate, but at Dr. Barb Olger, where she shares a wealth of information on this important mineral, magnesium, and on inflammation. You can also contact her through her website at www.barbolger.com. She will spell it out for you. But welcome, Dr. Barb. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always absolutely passionate about talking about magnesium and the importance of this mineral. And I think that, yes, we've been seeing more attention given to this mineral, but we didn't get a lot of attention focused towards this mineral until probably in the last few years. But it is such a crucial mineral, and it's something that we need to address and get out there for others to kind of make sure that they are aware of all the benefits of this really, really important mineral, magnesium.
Yeah, absolutely. Why do you think that it took so long for us to sort of, for it to come to the forefront of health and wellness so that people can become aware?
Well, it's not a popular, or it wasn't a popular mineral. So calcium, you know, its bones, it took over zinc, immune system, right? So it just kind of got squashed down and it didn't really get a lot of recognition. But I know even when we were in school in naturopathic medical college, and we didn't actually talk about magnesium. We talked about calcium. We talked about zinc. We talked about some of the other minerals that were involved in bodily processes, but we didn't talk much about magnesium. I actually really dived into the research in magnesium after school. So it wasn't something that we actually learned a lot about.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I know that, and I want the audience to sort of, I want to drive this point home for the audience. Health is ever evolving as we do more research and as we test things out, we recognize and we come to see what's important, what's working, what's not working, especially as we go through the different stages. Like, for example, I was listening to a lecture on menopause as I'm approaching that stage, and it's incredible. There isn't a lot of research done on that stage of life, especially in women's health. And of course, the professor that was speaking to it was actually mentioning that magnesium is one of the most important nutrients that you need to take, and especially in a higher dosage than the recommended daily intake that is widely known. So what, up to what, 350 milligrams for women? She was actually recommending 500 to 600, so almost double that. And but I want to let's tell the audience, what exactly is magnesium? So it's a mineral, we know that, but let's explain it in more depth so that they understand why it's important and why it's part of our diet and why it's important for health and wellness.
Yeah, for sure. It's an essential mineral. So what that means is the body doesn't make it. So we have to bring it in from either food, supplementation, transdermally, however you want to get it in, we need to actually bring it into the body. And so it's the fourth most abundant mineral in the body. So this is behind potassium, calcium, the sodium, all the ones that we talked about and that get a lot of attention. But we also know that magnesium, as of the latest research of December 2023, is involved in over 800 enzymatic reactions in the body. So
wow.
What does that mean in English? It means that pretty much everything that happens in the body is actually being led by a cofactor of magnesium, or an enzyme that needs magnesium, or anything that needs to convert down a certain pathway has to be brought in by having this reaction happen with magnesium. So if you don't have magnesium, then some of those processes are not going to happen. And so this is where we see sometimes deficiencies. And I mean, if we look at what magnesium is known for, it's known for energy production, protein synthesis, muscle function, nerve function, blood glucose control, blood pressure regulation, bone health, mood support. I mean, these are all really general areas, but all of those things are happening because magnesium is playing some role, whether, like I said, as an enzyme, as a cofactor, in all of those enzymatic reactions. And so we, as you know, beings, we need to make sure that we have enough magnesium so all of these processes can actually happen. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, but 70 to 80% of us are deficient in this.
That's a huge number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you say, just based on what you said, is this sort of the same as us needing insulin for sugar to get into cells? We need, so equally speaking, we need magnesium for certain things to happen.
Right. So in the body, I mean, without getting into a whole bunch of biochemistry, in the body, there are biochemical reactions that happen. And what they require are either enzymes or cofactors to make those processes happen. Now, if you're missing cofactors or you're missing enzymes, you're not going to allow, or that process is not going to happen. And so, for instance, if we use your insulin example, magnesium sensitizes the insulin receptor. So if you want more sensitization of insulin receptors, you need to have magnesium. So if you don't have enough magnesium, you're likely not having a lot of sensitization of that receptor. And so that's just one example of what magnesium is responsible for. And that's why it helps in supporting blood glucose levels, because we know insulin goes, takes the glucose out of the blood and puts it into the cell or the liver or the muscles or the fat tissue. But if your receptors are not sensitive enough, it's not going to get everything. And then we end up with glucose staying in the blood, which is what we don't want.
And insulin resistance. That's right. So there you go. We actually need magnesium even for that to address insulin resistance. That's incredible. And I also wanted to know, so from a personal perspective, why are you so keen on this particular nutrient? I mean, you just said that 70 to 80% of us, that's a huge number, huge. 70 to 80% of us are deficient, which clearly speaks to why certain things related to health are actually so prevalent out there. But why did you choose this particular, what was the attraction to this nutrient that made you, because you're focused on it. I mean, I follow you on Instagram, and ever since I started following you, when I came across you, that's all you speak about.
Yeah. And I actually accidentally came upon this, and it was actually in practice. So in Ontario, we have naturopathic doctors and we have private, our publicly funded healthcare. We are privately funded healthcare individuals, as are you self. And so most people will go to their doctor, get what they need. And then when they run out of ideas or options, these patients often appear in our offices and they're like, okay, so this is what they've said is my life and I don't like it and I want to do something about it. So when I first started in practice, I would get a ton of these patients coming in and they had been to every specialist, every doctor, every, like they were on medications, they had everything done. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do with these people? Like there was just so much that had already been done and they were coming almost like as a last resort, which is sad, but that's what they were there for. And so I would go into the research and I would get like all this information. And every single time I went into the research, there would be this magnesium that would come up and I'd be like, why is this always here? Like, this is so like prominent. And it was like, make sure that they have enough magnesium so this process can happen. So this, you know, help with this, whatever we were looking at. And so often I would send them home with literally a dose of magnesium. And I'd be like, take this for the next week and then let me know how you feel. And almost every single patient came back and was like, oh my goodness, I like feel so much better. I have had this and I've been doing this and I've had more energy and I have more clarity and my mood is better. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I gave them nothing else. So it was my like N of one study, but they were coming back with results. And so I started to take the research that I gotten and I put them into folders and I just had like all this information. And so I just got more and more interested the more and more I used it with patients. And I mean, I had full disclosure with them. I was like, okay, I don't know if this is going to do anything, but let's just try it. It's not an expensive supplement. It's not, doesn't have very many interactions that I had to worry about. And yet we kept getting such great results. And that kind of started me on this deep dive. And I really started to get into the weeds with magnesium. And, you know, it's not like there's no research on it. There's 120,000 studies on magnesium. So it is a very well-researched mineral. And like even up to now, there's still new research coming out and new stuff coming out. Like I said at the beginning, the 800 enzymatic reactions, that was 300, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So they've done all this research to actually now say, look how much more this mineral is actually responsible for in our bodies. And so the research is there. It's not that there's no research. It just has to, we need more awareness around it.
So true. And of course, thank God for individuals like yourself, because it's, you know, people in that field that can actually bring this truth to the world so that we don't have to necessarily rely on allopathic medicine to address things with, you know, pharmaceuticals. And what you said speaks to my exact situation, because I blindly went through trying to address why I was having migraines and then an eventual stroke in 2011. And I had no idea. And then, of course, I can say it hasn't been that long ago. I would say maybe 4 years ago, I started taking magnesium, but I mean, I high dosed. And I studied under a doctor, naturopathic doctor in the United States. And I remember him saying, when they try to say take calcium, it's actually magnesium you need. And I'm like, really? But isn't calcium what teeth and bones are made out of? And then he spoke to the calcium magnesium balance, sodium potassium balance. So there is a balance that's necessary. But my sleep actually got so much better when I started taking magnesium. And of course, my migraines went away. I stopped having muscle spasms, much more relaxed, got really like for constipation purposes as well. So I got regular, so many things, exactly what you said, like just that one thing took care of so many things. But I really wanted to emphasize to the audience, so some of the conditions associated with low magnesium, I'm not sure whether your patients in particular came with these particular conditions, but things like anxiety, depression, migraines, which of course was my thing, high cholesterol, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, asthma, insomnia, which again was my thing, and sleep disturbances, decreased physical activity and performance ability, stress, spasms and cramps, again, my thing, memory issues, cancer, my goodness, cancer, osteoporosis, atherosclerosis, stroke, of course, that was me, and chronic inflammation. So look at how many conditions are actually associated. And this is just with low magnesium. I can't even imagine with deficiency altogether. And I know that the soil has been so depleted. So I really wanted to emphasize to everybody that, you know, despite the fact that for myself as a nutritionist would always recommend try to get everything from foods, I think it's become really important that we supplement with this rather than rely on foods that don't have the soil to pull it from to be able to have it available.
And just to go back onto your note, like the problem here is I get this a lot. Oh, my doctor tested my magnesium. It's fine. And they test the serum magnesium, and you will very, very rarely ever find a patient whose serum magnesium is not fine, because what they're testing for is only 1% of magnesium. And
what?
1% of magnesium is in our blood. That's it. The rest is in our bones and our tissues. So we don't really have an accurate way of measuring magnesium. Red blood cell magnesium is probably another more accurate test, but still not perfect. Because again, most of our tissue is in the bone, or most of our magnesium is in the bone and the tissues. So if we do a bone or a muscle biopsy, then we can see how much magnesium is in the system. Now, we're not going to do muscle biopsies because that's quite invasive.
Very.
But in the research, that's how they determine whether or not people are deficient. Now, there's over 60 different causes that cause you to be deficient in magnesium. And diet is just one of them, right? So our soils is just one of the reasons we become deficient. And this is why we see such high deficiency. But here's the other thing. You can actually have normal levels of magnesium and still be deficient. And this has now come out a lot in the research where, you know, they're testing these individuals and their magnesium status is within range, but they still have magnesium deficiency. And so it's really hard to totally get magnesium deficiency on paper. And so when people look at their serum magnesium level, they think they're fine and then they don't worry. Now, all of those things that you mentioned, all of those are very common symptoms of many other illnesses and diseases, right? Insomnia, inflammation,
yes,
blood pressure, metabolic syndrome, right? These are all packed in. And so our general medical profession doesn't actually separate any of that. So they're like, oh, you have inflammation. Like there's no talk about, okay, why are we having inflammation? Where's the magnesium status? And should we be looking at that? And so it's a really, you know, and doctors aren't trained to do red blood cell magnesium. They're trained to run serum magnesium, and it's only looking at 1%. So if you're looking at your blood work, that's not an accurate representation of your magnesium status. And you really can't use that as a status. And that's why the deficiency rate is so high.
Well, because people are misled to believe that, well, it's within range, so you're okay. And then they go on and wonder, why do I have headaches? Why do I have migraines? Why do I have chronic inflammation? Why is my blood pressure still high? Yeah. Wow. Okay. That was going to be one of my questions. Magnesium deficiency, what does it show up as? But we just touched on that. And of course, it's important to have it. So would you then recommend that people continue to test it? Or would you then recommend to just say, you know what? Soil has been depleted. Foods that you eat do not meet your required intake. So it's important to just supplement regardless.
What I do in practice is I usually look at the individual and I look at, okay, so how many things does this individual have that is depleting their magnesium? Mm-hmm. So are they on any medications such as proton pump inhibitors, statins? Do they take a lot of antibiotics? Are they on birth control pills? You know, are they on diuretics like blood pressure medication? That is going to deplete magnesium. What is their stress level like? Stress is going to deplete your magnesium. It helps with your stress, but it also depletes your magnesium. If their insulin resistance or their blood sugar levels are not optimal, they are actually depleting magnesium, because it's with stress and insulin resistance, it's almost like a vicious circle. You need it to sensitize the insulin receptors, as I had said earlier, but if you don't have enough, you're actually depleting your magnesium levels, because the sugar is going to make you release the magnesium through the kidneys, right? The urine. And in stress, if you don't have enough, you will have the physical symptoms of stress. But if you, and if that depletes magnesium, but if you take magnesium, you are better able to deal with that stress response. And so I look at, you know, those sections. Are they craving sugar? Do they eat a lot of sugar? Sugar depletes magnesium. We know this. Anywhere from, you know, 40 to 54 molecules of magnesium are required to process one molecule of sugar. So if you're eating a lot of sugar, you're going to be going through magnesium, right? Then you have to look at, okay, what is their diet like? Are they not eating vegetables, leafy greens? Because magnesium is found in mostly plant foods, right? So it's avocados and dark leafy greens and pumpkin seeds and those kinds of things. And so, you know, what is their diet like? Are they actually able to get in a little bit of magnesium? And so I look at all of these things. Do they work out a lot? Do they sweat a lot? Are they losing it through sweat? Do they drink a lot of alcohol? Are they losing that because it's a diuretic? And then from there, I kind of say, okay, you know what? They tick off so many boxes, and this is kind of where I need to have them in order to make sure that they actually have enough. And on the odd occasion, I will test red blood cell magnesium just to kind of see. And I have had some low level ones. But if I'm going to test that, I want to see them at the very top end of that range. It's a more expensive test. Most doctors won't run it. So that's another hindrance there. And it's just, it's not a 100% guaranteed test either. So I wouldn't put all my money on it, but that's kind of how I figure out, okay, how much magnesium does this person actually need? Because I have to figure out how much they're depleting too. So if you fall into some of those boxes, you kind of know you're depleting your magnesium stores daily.
I'd like to take a quick break now to let you know that today's show is sponsored by my book, Against Medical Advice. This book is a memoir, and it tells the story of how I built my life back after suffering a stroke during my divorce. I discuss the nutritional, lifestyle, and mindset aspects that I put into practice to regain my health and rebuild my life. The book has been a labor of love, both writing it and publishing it, and I couldn't be more proud of it. Please pick up your copy from Amazon. For your very own signed copy, my email address is simone@simonegisondi.com. Oh, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd please consider leaving a review once you've read the book. And now, back to the show. I think that just based on, you know, the prevalence of sugar intake that, you know, is out there right now, it's so obvious that probably that's why you said 70 to 80% of us are deficient. And then you're talking about obviously the medications. A lot of people are on medications, especially SSRIs and proton inhibitors. And you also said diuretics. So I'm assuming that coffee will also do the same thing, not just alcohol, because so I gave up coffee for that reason, because I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, I was consuming a lot of coffee when I was going through my migraine time frame. And I thought, if I was to give up coffee and I'm able to take the magnesium, let's see how that works. And of course, it worked wonders. But just based on what you said about people's diets, prevalence of medications, alcohol consumption, as well as coffee consumption, just those things alone would probably lead people to become deficient. And that alone shows why we need to make sure that we supplement with it. Yeah. My goodness, this is so educational. I'm so grateful that we're getting this information out there so that at least people can go out and just say, hey, start taking magnesium. So you just mentioned that when you work with your patients, you look at their diets, and every so often you're going to be doing some sort of serum test to see where they're at in their blood, although that's only 1% of the magnesium ends up there. Is there a way that if they don't get it from their diet and then you ask them to supplement, is there a high, can they become toxic if they take too much magnesium?
You can, well, yeah. So like I said, there's not a lot of interactions with magnesium, but the one that you really have to be careful with is with people with any type of kidney disease or kidney malfunction or not good kidney health, because magnesium is going to be eliminated through the kidneys. And so that would be probably the biggest contraindication, is kidney function, like making sure that they have good kidney function. Are you going to get into a toxic level? You could possibly, but you'd have to take a lot, which I don't think most people are. If I need to use a high dose of a magnesium, let's say for a really stubborn constipation case, or I just need to get bowels moving, I'll use oxide, because oxide, we only absorb 5%. So we don't really, it doesn't matter really how high we go, because we're not absorbing it. It's more like a laxative, if anything, but it's also not a stimulating laxative. It's an osmotic laxative. So it's bringing water into the colon, helping things move along. So I will use higher doses in those cases. But can you like get really toxic? I don't think we would ever take that much magnesium to get to that. You also start to get GI upset and loose bowel movements, the higher you go up with magnesium. So that usually stops people. And, you know, it's like, okay, I might have had enough, but that's not often. Like, I don't have to deal with that often. When I deal with patients, it's usually, you know, I'll usually dose anywhere from 400 to maybe 1,000 milligrams at times. Unless, like I said, if I'm using oxide, then that sometimes is a bit higher.
Okay. Okay. Because I wanted to know, what is the normal range for people to take from my research? And of course, we have that with vitamin C and vitamin D. They tend to go and recommend very lower dosage. I've given my children about 10,000 IUs of vitamin D, even though I know that the RDA, the recommended daily allowed intake, was about 1,000 to 3,000. But I've had no qualms about giving them more. So I just wanted to know whether magnesium is something that you can sort of have a higher dose without any kind of, you know, consequences, for lack of a better term. So you stated that the that magnesium is a cofactor, and I think you said for over, what, 800 different
either
enzymatic.
An enzyme or a cofactor.
Right. So let's talk about the substrates. And you just talked about oxide when you indicated that for constipation, that's what you tend to recommend. So there are different ones out there, and I'm sure that everybody's typically very confused as to what's the best one to take. So I take L-threonate for brain health, especially because I had a stroke. It has really helped me with my sleep. But I want to sort of speak to, or at least allow you to speak to, some of the more prevalent important ones. So glycinate, citrate, L-threonate, oxide, like you said. What are some of the best ones, if you can maybe just go through them so that people can understand what they could take it for, and perhaps you can also address some of the dosages.
Yeah, so the dosages are going to range, again, depending upon what's going on. It's hard to give a specific dose, especially because it's so variable, and you need to work with a therapeutic dose if you're trying to do something. I would say that most times it's more than the RDA. The RDA is often the minimum amount that we need to prevent severe deficiency, right? It's like this for everything, like whether you take a vitamin, a nutrient, a macronutrient, they're always going to give you the minimum that you're not going to end up with a disease or a deficiency of that disease. So the RDA is usually not enough. Now, as far as the substrates, there's 18 different kinds of magnesiums. We're going to talk about maybe five or six that are more common and that you can purchase, you know, at a health food store or at a grocery store or wherever you get your supplements. Bisglycinate is probably, or glycinate, they're the same thing. That's probably the most common form of magnesium. I like to call it like a nice all-around form. So if I have many different inputs that I need to be addressing, I will most often go with bisglycinate. It's really well tolerated, gentle on the stomach. So if somebody has sensitivities and stuff like that, it's easy to use. It doesn't require stomach acid. So for those that have digestive issues such as Crohn's, colitis, where they're really struggling to absorb their nutrients and their minerals and their vitamins, this actually will be beneficial for them because they don't require the stomach acid in order for it to actually get into the system. So it's a good thing. And it's readily available, it's not expensive, and it kind of can touch on many different things. So I like to count that as like my all around. But if I were to look at it individually, I like using it for sleep. I like using it for joint pain. I like using it for anything that's tight or crampy. Insulin resistance, I'll use it for. Stress, I'll use it for. So those are really big subsection. So this mineral does really well, or this form of magnesium does really well. And then there's citrate, which was really popular prior to bisglycinate. And citrate is more, I use it for digestion. So if the constipation isn't too severe, I will use citrate to do some bowel movements until we can get the root cause figured out of what's causing that constipation. I use it in migraines. There's a lot of research that shows 600 to 800 milligrams of citrate in migraines works well. So depending upon that individual, I sometimes will use it for that. I will use it for GERD. It helps in just allowing that flap to stay down. And there's some research there as well. And then citrate can also be used for sleep. It can be used for stress, right? It's more like, I keep it more to the digestive process, but if I have to use it and I don't want to put people on several different forms, I will use just the citrate. And then there is L-threonate, as you mentioned, which is great for brain health, great for memory, cognition, all types of brain function. There's a really interesting study that they did with elderly patients that were cognitive decline on the scale was there, and they gave them the L-threonate for 3 months and or 4 months, sorry, 120 days. And they actually reversed their brain age by 9 years. And so,
wow.
Yeah, so that's how powerful this form of supplement is for the brain. It crosses the blood-brain barrier, so obviously it has more opportunity to do what it needs to do. It's really great for neuronal connections. There's also some research on, you know, new neuronal connections happening with L-threonate. So I also use it for anxiety, depression, a lot of the mood disorders, those kinds of things. It's a little pricier, and the dosing on L-threonate is usually lower, right? So it's not as high as you would see like a 200 milligram of bisglycinate or citrate or something like that. Then malate is probably my next big form of magnesium. And malate I use in chronic fatigue syndromes, fibromyalgia syndromes, a lot of muscle and joint pain, like where it's really, they have tender points all over the place, more like fibro. I use that. If I want to detoxify heavy metals like aluminum, I'll use magnesium malate. But yeah, mainly for energy. And it also helps with like saliva production and oral health. So, another reason I'll use it sometimes. And then we have magnesium oxide, as I've already mentioned. I only use that for a potential bowel clear out if I need to. And it's in more severe cases and it seems to work well and it's quick and, you know, you can go with higher dosing and you don't have to worry because we have very little absorption from, the actual oxide. It's less than 5%. So you're not retaining anything that you're really taking in. So in that respect, it works great as like a laxative.
That's amazing. I'm so glad that you mentioned what some of the things that it addresses so that if anybody out there is actually afflicted with those things, and of course we all are with one thing or another, those are the go-tos. And at least try it out so that you could see if that's going to address it or alleviate at least a little bit of what you're dealing with. Now, let's talk a little bit about the myths of magnesium, because I'm sure there are many out there. And I'm sure that because you did mention that there's been a lot of research done on this amazing mineral. So I'm sure that they've been able to demystify a lot of the things that was this particular nutrient was shrouded in. So what are some of the myths that were sort of running rampant and then they were demystified with the research done?
Well, number one was magnesium deficiency, right? So this was actually touted as being rare. And again, because we're only testing 1% of the magnesium in most people's serum or most people's body by doing the serum magnesium. So this was a big myth that came around and was around for a long time. And now some of the research is saying that if you're magnesium deficient, you're almost twice as likely to die from something. And so that is a pretty direct connection to we need to take magnesium deficiency seriously and we need to pay attention to that. And it is a myth. It's not rare. It's 60, 70, sometimes in some areas we are up to 80% depending upon the general population. And so we talked about what causes some of these deficiencies. And a lot of these things are common everyday things, medication, stress, sugar. These are things that people are always doing. And so that's why it's kind of been overturned and it's not really a myth of this sort. I think the second biggest myth is probably like a balanced diet is going to provide you sufficient magnesium. And I'm a naturopathic doctor. I believe food is powerful. I believe what we put at the end of our fork can transform our health, but we have to be realistic with what is going into our foods from like a nutrient sense when they're doing these, you know, modern agricultural practices and soil depletions and, you know, the plants are getting less. And so obviously your food is going to get less content when it comes to magnesium. And so yes, the RDA is set fairly low at 350 for women, 420 for men. And we also have to remember that RDA has not been updated since 1997. And RDAs are based on weight. right? So they take the average weight, and that's how they figure out what the RDA should be for whatever it is that you're talking about. Now, in 1997, the average weight versus today's average weight is 30 pounds difference. So
wow.
In that alone, it's not giving you enough in that RDA to probably substantiate what you need in your body. And so that is another myth that we need to debunk. And remember, we can only bring magnesium in. It doesn't get made in our body. So if you're not bringing in through some form of supplementation or some transdermal applications, you are going to have a hard time probably getting sufficient magnesium through the diet alone. Is it completely impossible? No. If you don't have stress, you don't eat sugar, you're not on medications, and you know, you are, you know, perfect, you might be able to do this. And but most for the most part of the population, this is not happening. So that is definitely a myth. And then of course, all forms of magnesium are not equal, as we just said. So certain forms are going to do certain things better. Not that, you know, magnesium on an overall is going to, yes, touch on a lot of things, but there's certain forms that are going to do their job better. So if I was looking at doing something in the brain space, I'm probably going to go with L-threonate because it can cross that blood-brain barrier. Whereas with bisglycinate, I'm not getting the same benefit. I might get some mood changes, but I'm not getting the therapeutic that I could from a form that is maybe more suitable for that area of the body. And then the next myth is, so a lot of people believe that if they take vitamin D3, it's active, it's going to be in the body, and you are going to get your vitamin D and we're good to go. The problem is, the reason vitamin D deficiency is as high as it is because if you don't have enough magnesium, you are not going to actually activate that vitamin D. So yes, vitamin D3 is active. It's an active form, but it still needs to go through the liver and the kidneys. And that enzyme requires magnesium in order to activate that vitamin D3 that you've just swallowed to actually do anything for your body.
Wow.
So if you don't have enough magnesium, you're likely not actually converting the vitamin D that you're taking and activating it. And so a lot of, you know, people believe that, okay, vitamin D deficiency is all about calcium and all of that. And that there is some truth to that, but we also need magnesium in order to break calcium down to do the job that it needs to do, or else we end up with calcifications, which are stones, spurs, calcifications in the arteries. These are not good things. These are not things we want. So if you don't have magnesium and you're taking all this calcium, there's nothing to break down the calcium. And magnesium's job is to break down the calcium. And this is how it works with vitamin D. And so if you sometimes take very large doses of vitamin D, you can actually deplete your magnesium because it's so large. And that isn't always the best option. But number one, we need to make sure you have enough magnesium so that the vitamin D you're taking is actually becoming activated and being able to be used in the body.
Does it work the same with sunshine? So I know that, so vitamin D is actually a hormone. We just call it vitamin D because we supplement it, especially for us here in Canada. We don't have access to a lot of sunshine, especially during the long winters that we have. So let's say we get exposed to sunshine and the body usually makes vitamin D naturally through the sunshine and it converts it. If we are magnesium deficient, it's going to have the same effect as if we were going to supplement it. The sunshine's not going to do any more magic to it then.
Right. You still need to convert it in the liver and the kidneys to actually make it so that it can do what it needs to do in your body. So if you don't, then you just have a lot of vitamin D sitting around that isn't actually doing anything. And you will see this. Like, I test people's vitamin D all the time, and they'll be really low. And they'll be like, but I took vitamin D for like 5,000 international units for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it hasn't moved hardly at all. And then we add magnesium in, and all of a sudden they're, you know, over 100. And so you can actually see this working just by doing blood work and then implementing something. So it's a really big problem, because, you know, we're all on this vitamin D train, but we also have to realize that if we don't have enough magnesium, the vitamin D isn't going to do us much good.
Wow. So this really speaks to just how crucial this mineral is. Now I understand why you love it so much. But let's let the audience know about children. So let's talk about magnesium for kids. I mean, you spoke to the fact that diets are so depleted of the nutrients that the body actually needs and looks for. And of course, because children's diets are actually typically, especially those that go to school, are typically even worse than those of adults, because they tend to want to, you know, have the really bad snacks that don't really necessarily contain the nutrients necessary for good health. And as such, children probably need to have this supplemented as well, so that they don't have the, or at least not to even in, as they get towards adulthood, they don't have to end up with the chronic fatigue and all of these other deficiencies that cause these illnesses and diseases. So what would you say for children? What should the audience do? What should we give our kids? Especially, you spoke to the vitamin D, because typically kids also get vitamin D.
Right. Now, kids aren't going to have as many contributing factors to deficiency, right? So we have to take that into play. They're not likely going to be on medications. They're likely not experiencing stress. Yes, they might eat sugar. Yes, they might have a bad or semi-poor diet. But a lot of the big factors, they're not really in play with children. So in children, sometimes I will do a multi and then bump up some of the magnesium sometimes. And it depends too. Like, it depends how old that child is. Can they swallow a capsule? Should they have the liquid, right? Or is there powder that we can use? So I know when I use citrate for kids that have constipation or kids that have trouble moving their bowels, I will usually use it in a powder form. Bisglycinate, I will use in a liquid form for kids, especially behavioral issues, ADHD, ADD. I will often throw in magnesium with B6. It works fantastic. And it really helps with those behavioral issues. But usually I would say that I am not dosing heavily on children that are like 12 and under. Usually I don't even see a big need for it, because they don't have as many depletions that we do. Then once we get into the 12 and 13 year olds, we start to see some of the more depletions. They're either, if they're work, like, you know, having gym class, or they're playing sports, or they're, you know, eating, you know, on the run, and they, maybe their nutrition isn't so good, and they could have stress, right? Because now they're in puberty. And so they have more things coming into the mix. And so at that point, I get a little bit more involved in, okay, let's see how much we actually need to sustain and make sure that we are hitting all the targets.
Yeah, of course, they don't have bills to pay yet. Stress hasn't hit them hard. But it's just a matter of trying to set them up for good health for later on in life. So you want to start with the foundation of a good balanced diet. How about pregnancy?
Yeah, so magnesium is actually necessary in pregnancy. I always say it's a requirement for pregnancy and breastfeeding. And that is because baby's going to take some of that, right? And breastfeeding, we're going to be giving those nutrients to the baby during, like through breast milk and stuff. So I highly recommend magnesium through pregnancy, through breastfeeding. It's also helps with a lot of, like, often constipation that happens in pregnancy, reflux that happens in pregnancy, insomnia that happens in pregnancy.
Oh, yes.
So a lot of those are helpful. And then, of course, it just helps the body, because, I mean, pregnancy, it's a stressor on the body, right? It's regardless, it's a stressor on the body. The body looks like it has to do something else. We also become more insulin resistant when we're pregnant. And so that's also another reason we want to include magnesium into the mix, but definitely recommended in both pregnancy and breastfeeding.
Would you say bisglycinate would be the most ideal one during pregnancy?
Yeah, I keep it really simple, very across the board, because with pregnancy, there's so many things, like there's not one specific thing. And so we want to use like an all around form that's going to be well tolerated. It's going to, you know, be absorbable. We want all that happening and we don't want to, you know, cause any other issues. So I usually always go bisglycinate.
Okay. And is there a certain, and of course, I know you did mention that it's very unique to each individual, especially if there are other deficiencies that you have to address. But is there a specific dose that's a good catch-all dose, given the fact that, as they say, you know, you're eating for two, you're supplementing for two. I mean, it's not a full-grown individual inside of you, but nevertheless, you want to make sure that you address the developmental needs of baby as well as your own needs and to avoid deficiency.
Yeah, so that can range like anywhere from 400 to sometimes 700-800 milligrams, but it's always best to consult with somebody because a lot of things have to go into play with that. So your health history, your medical history, and you know, it is safe in pregnancy, but magnesium is not in, you know, contraindicated or anything like that. But if you're on medications or you're taking some, there's always something that you need to be addressed. So don't just blindly supplement because that's not a good thing either. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're seeing someone like a nutritionist or a dietitian or a naturopath or functional medicine doctor to help you make sure that you're taking the right dose at the right time for your individual health issues, because that's really important. Because a lot of people will come in and go, I already tried magnesium, it doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, so what did we try? And, you know, they'll have been taking 200 milligrams and they take it, you know, first thing in the morning, and then they don't supplement anything anymore. And so, you know, that's obviously not going to do a lot, especially if you're in a deficient state. Your body's just going to swallow that up. Like, it's not going to give you any benefit, right? So it's really important that you get to the right dose and take it at the right time. And you need to have a therapeutic dose most often to kind of see progression and benefits. And so that's really important. And that's usually why we recommend you work with someone so that they know your whole picture and they can kind of say, okay, you know what? You actually need this much. And Sarah next to you might only need this much, right? Like, it's a mineral that we don't just say, oh, take 1,000 milligrams or, oh, take 500 milligrams, because it's very different. And it's very different in how that individual breaks it down. Like, you know, is that person pregnant? Is that person an athlete? Is that person a huge coffee drinker? Do they drink a lot of alcohol? Like, these are all things we have to take into the mix because they all matter.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I guess it depends if when you go and you work with a practitioner, they look at the whole picture. Hence, we are called holistic. So we look at the whole person, their diet, if they have any medication intake, lifestyle, of course, for athletes that sweat a lot. That's probably one of the first things that's going to go. You sweat out all your minerals. That's why typically sweat is very salty. All your minerals come out and through the sweat.
And if you look at electrolytes, what's in an electrolyte?
That's right.
Chloride, potassium, magnesium, right? Because we're losing, magnesium is an electrolyte. And that's why you see it on your blood work. You see them testing, you know, sodium, potassium, magnesium, chloride, because they're looking at your electrolyte composition.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason you are being tested for magnesium. That is not going to tell you anything about the magnesium in your body or the deficiency state. So as an electrolyte, as long as it's in balance, and it will, because if it isn't, you're likely not doing very well. You will not be, you know, you're likely not outside. You're probably in a hospital. So that's how tightly regulated it is. And so that's why we cannot use that number.
So one last thing that I wanted, because you're obviously you stay on top of all the research done. So I've through my research, especially when I started doing my my protocol for getting rid of my migraines with taking magnesium and of course looking at brain health and turning to L-threonate, especially because the stroke that I suffered back in 2011. But I also saw, so I wanted to know, I'm sure you know about it and you could speak to it. So they say that magnesium is actually one of the most important nutrients needed to for us to process trauma that's in the body. And typically trauma is obviously trapped in the nervous system, and it oftentimes it expresses itself through some sort of an illness in the body. But oftentimes, so this was huge for me for very obvious reasons. So oftentimes they say that our brain processes trauma through dreams. So things that we dream are actually when the brain is trying to process all of that trauma. And that typically happens when the body's not busy doing anything else. So that's obviously when we sleep. Without magnesium, if we don't remember, we talked about how insomnia is one of the things that we go through when we are low or deficient magnesium. So it's very important to make sure that you supplement this for your body to actually be able to process all the trauma. And I remember when I started taking L-threonate, and that was about 4 years ago, that's the first time I started remembering my dreams. And in fact, just I started remembering that I am dreaming. Prior to that, I'm like, oh, I don't dream any night. No, I never dream. And it was obviously because I couldn't remember the dreams, suffering from insomnia. And I think it's also very important during menopause, because insomnia is probably one of the most prevalent symptoms, one of the most prevalent things we deal with as women going through menopause. But it's so important because magnesium helps you sleep, your brain is able to go into the proper brain waves, and then is able to process the trauma. So I was blown away when I heard that. I'm like, wow, not only does it address things like high blood pressure, which is a very physiological thing, but yes, trauma, not so much.
Right. And it's because you had already alluded to it. It acts on the nervous system, right? And so mm-hmm. magnesium is going to always be very calming, very relaxing, very supportive of the nervous system. And so it's going to set up that opportunity for you to actually be able to process that. Now, B vitamins and magnesium are responsible for the dreaming part of sleep. And so, yes, usually if you are taking enough magnesium and then you have enough B vitamins coming in, namely B6 and B5, then you will also, they're also geared more towards the nervous system. But again, you give that opportunity for that to be processed in a way that can be helpful. And that's why it's included in that. So it does its work. Magnesium's work, a lot of it is like root, right? So it's like it goes back and it takes care of something that's underlying, so that next step can be done. And that's why it's so important, because those 800 enzymatic reactions, that's exactly what that means. If you are missing a link or you're missing a step, you're not getting to the next level. You're not getting to the next reaction. And so this is why we see how important this mineral is and why they're keep finding more and more of these reactions that are requiring magnesium for it to work.
Yeah, it's much like what they did with creatine. Because I recall creatine in the beginning was something that athletes were taking, and it looked like it was a substance that they were just doing so they can augment or improve their performance. And then fast forward to the days when more research came out, it's actually great for brain function. It's really great for cognitive health. So yeah, it's really important that we sort of keep up. And I'm sure that much like doctors do, so do we as practitioners. We stay on top of the research that comes out. And it's important that this research actually does take place so that we could see what do we actually need, especially as we evolve, especially as what you said, of the fact that the nutrients are no longer at the same level in foods. Therefore, we do need this supplementation. This was so amazing. This was like a masterclass in magnesium, this very important mineral. Dr. Barb, thank you so, so much. I'm sure the audience learned so much. And of course, in the beginning, we talked about where they can find you, but if you can just let us know. So your website is www.barbogerk. If you can spell it out so that they know how to spell it to be able to find you.
Yeah. So it's Barb Woger. So BarbWoegerer.com. And then I can also, I'm probably your most best bet to find me is on Instagram, and it's at Dr. Barb Woger, again, Woegerer. That's where I post a lot of the magnesium content. I put my stories up that surrounds a lot of the new research that's coming out. And so I usually stay on top of things, and whatever comes out, I kind of post and make sure that I share it with everyone so that that awareness is created. I really think it's a mineral that we need to pay attention to, and we need to create awareness around, and we need to get, you know, people thinking about, okay, you know what, maybe this is something that I need to look into. And so that's really my goal on social media and also in practice.
Yes, absolutely. This is how I found you on Instagram. So I very much appreciate, because I've learned from you, and it kind of led me down the rabbit hole to find out more about magnesium and why it's so important. I saw how passionate you are about it. So that's where they can find you, and you do in person as well as online. So they can reach out to you, maybe message you on Instagram or reach out to you through your website. If you guys want to book a consultation with her to do any kind of testing, she's a naturopathic doctor, all things natural and naturopathic. Dr. Barb, thank you so much. I really greatly appreciate not only your wisdom, your expertise, but just the fact that you took the time to generously share it with the audience and with me.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. And thank you so much for having me.
If there's any kind of research that comes up, I would love to have you back on so we could share with the audience so that they know and get educated about how important it is to stay on top of this. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We will see you in the next episode. Thank you for tuning to The Confidential. We hope you enjoyed the episode and found it interesting and informative. Please subscribe to the show to receive notifications when new episodes are released. You can also follow us on social media on Instagram at The Confidential Podcast to stay up to date with all things related to the show. We appreciate your support and welcome any feedback you may have. Until next time, stay curious and keep on learning. Thank you for listening.